The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network. VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, however you're taking us in. We appreciate it. It's Gil Alexander. It is Wyatt Tomchek, day number two. In for the vacationing Kelly Bidlin. How you doing, man?
Good, good. I was able to still wake up pretty nice today. Wasn't a struggle, but wait. Talk to me on Thursday or Friday.
Oh, four little days of this, and it might be the end for you on the waking up early.
I'm not a morning person. I've never been.
By the way, we've tracked Kelly like we track Santa Claus. Kelly is back from Austin. It went okay. He is in Vegas. Now he is headed to Los Angeles. So, again, the Kelly Bidlin low jack in full effect. He's all over the place. Have a good time, though.
Frequent flyer miles are being used very well.
7 a.m. weather check here, Pacific time in Las Vegas. Temperature 95 degrees Fahrenheit. Is that healthy? Oh, at 7 a.m.
So I saw a tweet yesterday, and I was thinking about you, and also I was crying about it. So the National Weather Service in Las Vegas said it was the first 23 days we were on par to have the hottest June ever compared to last year. 11 degrees hotter.
I feel every degree of it.
Mike, I walk out, I'm like, I have to blast the AC in my car full in the morning.
95 degrees weather in San Francisco right now. 58 degrees, just as a contrast. Hottest and coldest in the country. We have a show today, a good one. Drew Didzik joins us momentarily to talk NBA draft with us as our continuing coverage of the NBA draft, which, of course, commences tomorrow night, is happening. Drew's thoughts on that and beyond tennis, Olympics, who knows what else he's doing. John Legesa, instant offense and some baseball. Paul Spohr will be here to talk baseball. Paul Carr's got a bunch of Euro thoughts as well. Euros 2024. A whole bunch of soccer plays today, so we'll get into all of that. But first, Wyatt, Stanley Cup Final Game 7. Congratulations to the Florida Panthers. Congratulations to everybody who had Florida Panthers tickets. They get her done as a tick of a favorite last night. Minus 112, they win it 2-1, beating the Edmonton Oilers. So Canada still on the drought since 1993. And the Oilers do not make history for the fifth time in NHL history. What would have been the fifth time in NHL history, coming back from a 3-0 deficit to win a best-of-seven series. By the way, the complete stats on that from sport to sport now, in terms of teams down 3-0 trying to win a best-of-seven series, famously in the NBA, 0-157 in attempting to do that. 1-39 in Major League Baseball. Only the Red Sox doing it against the Yankees in the 2004 American League Championship Series, the only one to accomplish that feat. And it remains now stuck on 4-207 now. 4-207 in the history of the NHL. But the Panthers did it. It was a frenetic first period that was pretty awesome in both directions. The first salvo of this game coming from Carter Verhaeghe, really on the redirect. It was an Evan Rodriguez shot that Verhaeghe looked like it was going to be about 3 feet wide of the net, and Verhaeghe redirected it past Stuart Skinner. Panthers up 1-0, and a little more than 2 minutes later, then the Panthers out of position on defense. Great pass by Cody Ceci down the ice, all the way to Matthias Janmark, tied it up. That would be the score in the first intermission. Second period, what proved to be the game winner. Again, just defense that sort of should have picked up Sam Reinhart at the blue line. They backed up. Reinhart got himself some space, and it got by Skinner. And that would prove to be all the scoring. That would hold the rest of the way. Panthers win it 2-1 as the game falls comfortably under. And the big – oh, yes, you were going to say –
Well, I was going to say, also, after that first period, it felt like the over was going to hit easily.
Sure
did. The way both those teams are playing. But that game-winning goal, if you remember about like 20 seconds earlier, it was a loose puck in front of the net.
Yes.
It's amazing hockey. It's like, it's right there. Somebody just got to tap it in. And just the heads-up play by Florida, next thing you know. And it was kind of, they were saying on the broadcast, kind of a soft goal that Skinner gave up. But like said, also that the defense kind of just let the guy walk up and
got space. Things happen. No, you're so right. Basically, what hockey happened, right? A near miss on one end, and then what proved to be the game winner on the other. So at the first intermission, after the first period, I text Felica and Will Hill, and I go, isn't this going to be great when Connor McDavid wins the Conn Smythe without doing anything in Game 7? He hadn't done anything in Game 6 either. That proved to be the case, which we'll get to here, because this was my sort of timeline as this game was going on. Now, let me just preface this again, Wyatt, because this should serve, more than anything, the topic sentence here is, this should serve as a PSA to bettors, just another reminder that awards markets are not actual markets, right? These are not algorithms. These are not, a team is trailing in a baseball game 4-2. It's the bottom of the seventh. They're two out, but there's a runner at first and third. It's not mechanical like that. It's not even football. A team is down 9 points early fourth quarter, third and 13 at their own 12-yard line, right? There's an algorithmic output for all of those things. Awards markets are just awards markets. They're the bookmakers' own best reflection of what they think the market ought to be based on bets that they're getting, based on what the general market beyond them is getting. So remember now, Connor McDavid headed into this game seven was a cartoonish minus 2,500. Going into this game to win the Conn Smythe. Now, I had a tweet yesterday where I was going through this. At the end of the first period, again, when I had texted Will and Felica, I was like, he hadn't done anything. He was minus 800 at that point, at the end of the first period. By the time the third period started, he was down to minus 260, Connor McDavid. Barkov was actually the next short shot at plus 380, and Sergei Bobrovsky was plus 450. With 16:37 left in the final frame, Bobrovsky and Barkov had flipped in the market. McDavid was minus 240. Bobrovsky was plus 350. These numbers are at DraftKings. Barkov was plus 450. A little less than 2 minutes later, 14:41 left. McDavid minus 250. Bobrovsky plus 250. Barkov plus 550 at DraftKings. And then about a minute and a half later at 12:52 left in this one, McDavid's minus 200. Bobrovsky down to plus 180. Barkov now drifting minus 750. No need to mention his number anymore. With 751 left, DraftKings took that market down. So we went over to, I went over to Advocate Skirmish, as they call it. They still had theirs up. 702 left. This is right after, you may remember this sequence. There were two shots on goals from Evan Bouchard. There was one from Zach Hyman. It was just frenetic. McDavid now was down to minus 175. And Bobrovsky, with those saves, plus 120. This was the low mark for Sergei Bobrovsky in the betting markets to win the Conn Smythe, which is a full postseason award, mind you. But nonetheless, it was plus 120. Barkov, 11-1. It was not even worth mentioning. And then Advocate Skirmish took it down with just over 2 minutes left. With Bobrovsky under siege, it actually ticked a little bit in the other direction. McDavid was minus 260. Bobrovsky was plus 190. Of course, the winner ends up being, as we all know, Connor McDavid nonetheless. Didn't do anything, didn't score a point in Game 7, didn't in Game 6. And I get it, the breadth of his playoffs was unbelievable. Only Wayne Gretzky and Mario Lemieux had more points in postseasons than did Connor McDavid. Gretzky had 47 in the 84-85 playoffs. Lemieux, 44 for the Penguins in the 90-91 playoffs. Oh, I remember that one well. Caps went down. Gretzky, 43. In the 87-88 postseason, and here Connor McDavid, 42 in the 2023-24 playoffs. Of course, McDavid did not, by the way, here it is, 8 goals, 34 assists, the 42 points I mentioned, 25 takeaways. He did not come out to accept the award, Gary Bettman, under a siege of boos when he mentioned that it was an offensive player, and the crowd immediately knew. Oh, we were joking how, like, oh, really couldn't get him out with his, like, locker room slippers, too, how awkward that would be. Thanks, appreciate the award.
How
See you
awkward
later.
Is that? It's like, oh, hey, you're the playoff MVP. Like, thank goodness he didn't come out.
No,
been,
it would have been awful.
Because then, like you said, the fans are just going to are booing him and whatnot.
But the main point that I want to sort of suggest here is, once again, it's a PSA for all of us, and this applies to football when we're talking football awards, when we talk about baseball awards, which we do a lot. People love them, not only on this show, but network-wide. That awards markets are just nebulous and are just like this, what we think, I will say we're too close to the sun, the example I use again. We never, ever mentioned Brandon Crawford in the 2021 NL MVP race, I believe it was. No, it may have been 2022. 2021 it was. And Brandon Crawford, I went to San Francisco. My buddy was like, hey, Brandon Crawford's winning MVP. Yeah, and I'm like, what is he talking about? Like, we're better as we know he's not even close to winning MVP. He ended up fourth, right? So, like, we are often way too way too mesmerized by the numbers that are in front of us. Here is the actual voting. Just to put a bow on this, it is a grand total of 17 voters for the Conn Smythe. Greg Wyshynski put this out today. 17 voters. This is across the ESPNs of the world and the Associated Presses of the world and other publications. Connor McDavid, first place on 16 of these 17 ballots. I'm going to just go to the phone here so I can see it more accurately. 16 of 17, Wyatt. First place votes. Sergei Bobrovsky gets the first place vote in the 17th. Ryan S. Clark from ESPN, not that Ryan Clark, but a different Ryan Clark, votes him number one. You know, and it's first, second, and third. Bobrovsky gets no second place votes on any of the 17 ballots and only 2 third place votes on third place. In other words, Bobrovsky wasn't even anywhere close to winning this thing. Like, it's not even close. McDavid won it in a landslide with Barkov having, 15 of the 17 second-place votes. One ballot, it should be noted, and I want to name a name here, Daniel Nugent Bowman of The Athletic. No, that's not correct. Pardon me, Daniel Nugent Bowman, for bringing your name up on this. Jim Matheson of Post Media. You're familiar with Post Media, aren't you? No? McDavid Hyman Bouchard. He had 3 Oilers, 1, 2, 3. What? What are we doing? We're betting on this stuff. It's ridiculous that we're betting on this stuff, is the point. And whatever the market is doing, oftentimes, and this is a great example, has no bearing whatsoever on anything. It's just there and means nothing. Drew Dinsick on the other side. Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network. With our NFL betting guide dropping this Thursday, there has never been a better time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. Our all-new NFL betting guide, your secret weapon for the upcoming season, with in-depth profiles of every team, advanced stats, proven betting systems, and betting trends. You'll have all the tools you need to bet this season smarter. Plus, our experts share their top bets on season win totals, futures, and props, giving you the insights you need to get ahead of the action. To get the guide, you got to be a VSiN Pro subscriber, though. For a limited time, get an annual subscription to VSiN Pro at an unbeatable price, normally $240 a year. You can subscribe now, or you can subscribe now, either way, for just $199 with promo code ANG. Plus, we'll throw in an extra month for free. That's 13 months of VSiN Pro access to everything we do, including our daily best bets, 24/7 video, premium analysis, exclusive betting splits data, and all our special edition betting guides to keep you betting smarter all year long. Matt Humans, Adam Burke, Wes Reynolds, everybody does such a great job with these. Don't miss out on our all-new NFL betting guide and this incredible offer. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe right now. Use promo code ANG.
That is A-N-G. The letter A, the letter N, the letter G.
Okay. To get 13 months of VSiN Pro for just $199, reserve your copy of our all-new NFL betting guide. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. We'll get this right.
That was a long read.
It was long.
You know, I'm focusing. I'm getting ready for Drew Dinsick. I'm so excited. I got to text him for the first time. I was like, I made it in this world.
You got to text Drew Dinsick for the first time. Did he respond to you?
He did. He did, in a timely manner, and I appreciate that.
It's like we're talking about a girl that you liked in your senior year in high school. Drew Dinsick, everybody, joins us from his lair in the LBC, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow him on Twitter at @whale_capper. And, of course, he's got not one but 2 podcasts, The Deep Dive with Andy Molitor, and, of course, NBC Sports Bet the Edge, which he does with Jay Croucher. And Jay is awesome because he has an accent as well, an Australian accent. Drew, how you doing, man?
I am very well. Great time of year. NBA draft week.
Yes.
NBA Olympic trials wrapping up for swimming. I got my handicap all done for the swimming event. So, we're cooking. Tour de France starts this week. Really can't complain about the sports world right now.
No, not at all. I said yesterday, sneaky great time of year. And I know you love it, especially when you do this thing with your hands where you're like, I've got a secret way to do this. Okay, let's talk NBA draft first. We just passed, was it the 2-year anniversary of Paolo Banchero? I can't even keep up anymore.
Yeah, that was 2 years ago. Time flies.
Can you give us a brief oral history on that week or day? Like, keep it to like a minute, like for those who missed what happened that year.
Sure. I mean, it's deja vu all over again, in that it was a draft class where there was not certainty at the top. I mean, this is a really it's the NBA draft in general is just it's a different beast than the NFL, because There's like a 2 week turnaround here, and you know, the combine and the opportunity for these teams to figure out between knowing when they're picking in the lottery and actually making the pick is such a compressed schedule that you get this situation where you have years like that year with the Magic and this year with the Hawks, where there's huge amount of uncertainty as to who ultimately is going to be the pick at number one. And if there's uncertainty at pick number one, that means there's uncertainty everywhere. And I think in general, the you know, the people that were responsible for creating content around the NBA draft that year, all of them, you know, kind of looked at talent and need and Magic at the top and decided Jabari Smith. And then that got entrenched to where he was bet out to minus 700 to go first overall. And the weekend before, you know, that the what would have been, I guess, Saturday, Sunday, this past weekend before the draft, you know, there are a lot of, you know, kind of AAU friends and college program people that have access to these athletes, who come through the US system. And everyone who was connected to Jabari Smith was like, yeah, he had a really bad interview with the Magic. And it was like, wait a minute. Like, how can he be minus 700 to go first overall if his camp is like, yeah, we don't have a promise? The interview went poorly, and it was like, well, okay, let's start digging a little bit. And there was all kinds of questions swirling about Chet Holmgren's health, and his team was specifically trying to direct him to the Thunder second. And so you're like, okay, well, if the first guy didn't interview well, and the second guy doesn't want to go there, and the third guy is 20-1, this doesn't make sense at all. And so got every dime I could on Banchero to go first overall, and then it broke that way. And you know, the day of the draft, Wojnarowski, right before we went live talking about it, said, you know, it is increasingly likely that Jabari Smith will go first overall. And then the market, which had steamed heavily towards Banchero, largely because of, you know, a handful of bettors who were getting Banchero liquidity in, you know, just because it was uncertain, you know, that forced another correction where you had an additional opportunity to get money down on Banchero. And that's rare because, you know, this is a low liquidity pool. Betting the draft is kind of, it's a, you know, it's not a professional endeavor. You only get a couple of bites at the apple in a given year. You know, liquidity makes it such that, you know, if unless you have the nuts and you have an absurd price, you're not going to get rich doing this. So, you know, it's a funny marketplace. It's a funny market. And, you know, I mean, like, I don't know that ultimately there's going to be a huge amount of uncertainty at the top this year, but, you know, you're getting a lot of those same vibes. Certainly. I mean, we had a situation where 1 week ago, Alexander Sarr was the heavy favorite to go first overall, and now he's minus 800 to go second overall. So I guess that's decided. Okay, sure. And, you know, Rhys Sachet is, you know, your presumptive first overall pick right now, at least according to the offshore marketplace. And I don't know, I guess so. Maybe he's, you know, a clear top two talent, but maybe not. I mean, this is a really, really weak draft. And the team picking first overall, number one, was not expecting to be in this situation because the lottery was a surprise. And number two is just generally weak themselves. Like, they have a weak GM, you know, a guy who's not deeply entrenched in terms of the decision making there. And I think there are probably somewhere between 5 and 10 voices in the room with different opinions about what the Hawks should do with the first overall pick. And I don't think that there is or should necessarily be strong consensus about what to do as far as the future of the franchise, because you have Trae Young and DeJounte Murray who don't fit well, don't play well together. Trae Young, who I don't know that you're building a championship team around, and those guys still have value in terms of bringing in assets if you wanted to move them and start over with this, you know, this first overall pick as sort of the anchor of the future of the franchise. And, you know, it seems more likely to me there, at least from what I've heard, that you know, the Hawks are trying to figure out if they have a you know, a trade partner for Trae Young more than they are really even deciding who to take with this pick. So all of this happening, you know, 2 days before the draft is wild.
So if I say to you, what's your instinct? 1, 2, 3, what is your instinct at this moment?
Well, I mean, I think the most likely is probably Rishashe 1, SAR 2. And the only reason I say that is because SAR's team is, you know, sort of this is the same team that steered Chet Holmgren to Oklahoma City, one of the most, if not the most powerful rookie agent in the NBA, and Bill Duffy, who, you know, sees Washington as a better landing spot for SAR in terms of immediate opportunity. You know, particularly on the offensive side of things. And, you know, so it's to me, at least, SAR kind of stiffing the Hawks in the evaluation process, which is the, you know, the story going around, checks out, and that they're pointing him to number two checks out, which means number one, and sort of the reports that it's, you know, the Hawks are deciding between Rishashe and Klingon. Okay. You read that at face value. Fine. No, strong disagreement with that, but I will also say that that seems presumptive on the idea that they're not going to trade one of the guards, and that there's probably still a door open for a guy like Stephon Castle, who I know they have had in to do a workout and whose team is weirdly quiet. You know, I've taken some shots on Castle at just some absurd prices, just in case we have a repeat of history here where, you know, a guy who, you know, is an elite point of attack defender and, you know, is kind of has a lot of the fingerprints of a Jaylen Brown who just won your finals MVP, you know, is coming into this process and being a little bit underrated. He's enormous, by the way. He's 6'7" as far as a point guard goes. That's like absolutely ideal size wise for today's style of a defense in the NBA. And I think in general, I'm fine taking on a project like that as far as trying to get him to be a better shooter and contributor offensively. So we'll see if ultimately there's any legs there. But that's the only kind of weird, absurd shot I've taken in that market.
Yeah, not to interrupt, but as we approach the wall here. So when you say you've taken some weird shots on Castle, and I too have interpreted that as you took him number one, you took him at other numbers too early.
Oh, I only took him first overall at 100-1.
100-1, number one. Okay. Wow. All right. Given the Trae Young swirl that you're talking about, any other bet that you still like that's out there that you would say, yeah, bet this?
I've heard a lot of rumbling that Dalton Knecht is going to go in the top seven. So I played his under pretty heavily. That's actually going to decide my draft night one way or the other, at least as it stands right now.
Okay. Dalton Knecht, who I know before the tournament, I was thinking we were going to have a Danny Manning and the Miracles kind of run for Dalton Knecht out of Tennessee. Drew said in the top seven, so heavily on the under on Dalton Knecht. As the draft approaches tomorrow night, we'll put a bow on that on the other side. We'll also talk about the things that Drew just mentioned. Tour de France. He'll give us a name. We won't know who it is, but we'll just listen to him. And then Olympics, because I know he is just entrenched in that, swimming and beyond. It's a numbers game at VSiN. Drew coming back. The Sports Betting Network. With NFL training camp starting in less than a month, the VSiN experts have been hard at work to get you ready for the upcoming NFL season. Our all-new VSiN NFL Betting Guide drops Thursday, packed with everything you need to dominate the NFL season, in-depth profiles of every team, advanced stats, proven betting systems, proprietary betting trends that you will not find anywhere else. But that's not all. Our experts have weighed in with their best bets on season win totals, futures, and props. I was putting in my division. Everybody, all the VSiN personalities putting in their division and conference and Super Bowl champion thoughts, wild cards already on the grid. That'll be in there as well. Whether you're a seasoned bettor or just getting started, our NFL Betting Guide is your ticket to smarter, more informed bets. And to celebrate the release of the guide, VSiN's going all out with special coverage throughout the day. Tune in this Thursday for expert analysis, insider tips, and all the NFL insight you need to start the season strong. Remember, the only way to get our all-new betting guide for the NFL is to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. So visit VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up today. We get tweets at Beating the Book. I'm really looking forward to the football. I was reading not our betting guide, which I want to get into starting on Thursday with all of our, you know, everyone who contributed to it. But and Drew, this might have been you who posted this. Mike Tenier from our buddy Aaron Schatz's FTN operation. He had an NFC East write-up, which you literally couldn't get half a sentence in without laughing or remarking how clever it was. Just incredible.
Yeah. That's well said. And I'm glad we've given him some flowers because finding good, entertaining NFL writing this time of year is hard. And he crushed it, man. That blog was just absolutely tone perfect. And I loved his takes as well.
I trust our NFL betting guide will do the same on Thursday.
First thing I'm going to look at, I'm going to see what you picked for the NFC North. See if you went with my Green Bay Packers. We'll see how this Thursday will be, Gil. Either be good or bad.
What do you think I did? What do you think I did? Look at my eyes.
I don't know. I feel like you're still upset about the Lions. I don't know. Might be a spite bet.
We get texts. We get tweets. Michael Montesano, Circa Survivor, Booby Prize winner the first year. He says, speaking of awards, he was like, I believe Nick Sirianni and the chicaneries of that market in quotes. I believe Nick Sirianni was the betting favorite to win Coach of the Year in 2022, and he wasn't even a finalist. Maybe he was a finalist, can't remember, or maybe he didn't finish top three in votes or something like that, but it was Daboll first, Shanahan second, Peterson third, McDermott fourth, and Sirianni finished fifth. That's right, just an example of that. So again, we're talking about like our normal handicapping of games and futures with teams. Then we're talking awards markets, which are, again, markets in quotes, which, you know, there's no algorithm for that. Now with Drew, we're talking about draft, which is a puzzle to solve with Googling. Who's the best Googler out there? We get tweets, and we have some questions for you, actually, Drew. Well, one of them is from last week. One of them said, what is in Drew's fish tank? Well, there's a bet. He and his buddy were betting what fish you had in your fish tank.
Oh, yeah. So they're South American, Central American cichlids. They're aggressive fish. It's freshwater tank. It's a planet aquarium. They're real plants and they're real fish. They're named after our big three. I got a Roger, I got a Rafa, and I got a Joker.
Come on.
No, I'm serious.
I love that. That's awesome.
May I ask, what makes it an aggressive fish?
Yeah, what are they doing? Are they like coming up to the window?
They're not the kind that just float around all day like goldfish. They are active as hell. They don't eat each other, but they like to fight each other and have some fun.
I don't think, like the big three. I don't think either of these guys won their bet, by the way. That's why I was laughing. Sean saying at Sean's Fox Place, the movement has started. Risa Shea has gone, is getting longer in price. Klingon, it's now -250, +250. Michael Burns, now do Wemby Defensive Player of the Year vote. I'm still angry, he says. Numbers, guys, this question for Drew. And this actually dovetails nicely into what I was going to ask you. Like, what's the thing that's most uncertain about this draft and this market and the NBA draft tomorrow? Mm-hmm. He specifically asks, question for Drew, is Dalton Connect at number three, specifically at number three, at 100-1, a play you might recommend?
Absolutely. Yes, 100%. Of the market, like, number one is wrong just because I think it's flatter than the market implies, right? But the worst price, I think, is number three. I don't get the sense that there's strong tie between Houston and Reed Shepard at all. I think, in fact, if he goes three, I would guess he probably goes to some, you know, either Houston's taking him and then trading him, or somebody has traded into that pick, because from what I understand, Houston, in terms of where they view themselves as a franchise, they're not really interested in draft and develop at this point. Like, they've got their guys. Their depth chart is actually kind of deep. If anything, they'd like to move younger players to get established vets, the Marcus Smarts of the world, to try to, you know, make a run this year with the talent that they've got. So I would not be surprised at all if ultimately that goes to, again, like, the teams that I've heard connected to Connect are teams with lots of draft capital, but, you know, the Thunders of the world, teams in general that want to try to get ahead of Portland, because apparently the secret is out that Portland would take Connect at seven if he is there. So I think kind of that, you know, that three, five, six spots in terms of trade opportunities for a lot of these teams would be, kind of going up there and getting Connect ahead of Portland. And Houston may just take Connect third overall. It would not shock me at all. So 100-1 for that is a great bet. And in general, like, if you're making a bet on this year's NBA draft, if it has three numbers in it, congratulations, you made a good bet, even if it never cashes. Like, this is a hugely uncertain overall system this year in particular. I have no reservations whatsoever taking some shots.
It really is a cousin of that famous clip from The Office. If somebody gives you 10,000-1 on anything, this is, if somebody gives you 100-1 on anything, take it for this NBA draft. All right, real quick, because we only got 4 minutes. Tour de France, give us the 90-second synopsis. What do we need to know?
Yeah, so last 4 years, you've had two champions. It was Pogacar.
Sure.
Vindigo.
Sure.
Vindigo last year won because he was in the best shape of the tour. Pogacar came in injured, or he had gotten injured in the preparation, so he was a little bit out of shape, and Vindigo just put him in the hurt box in week two. This year, it's a little bit of a shoes on the other foot. Vindigo got hurt in April at the Tour of Basque Country. Of course, you're very familiar with Basque Country.
Absolutely, I am.
He had bad wreck there, fractured his collarbone. So he missed a ton of training time. Meanwhile, Pogacar is riding like an absolute man possessed. So to make things worse for Vindigo, he's lost his number one lieutenant, Sepp Kuss, who helps pull him up hills. He will not be in the tour for Team Visma. And I think in general, Pogacar's UAE team is much stronger this year than they have been in years past. And I think he could run away with this thing. So the Slovenian Tadej Pogacar. For me, for the Tour de France, Maillot Jaune. That is, of course, the yellow jersey.
Drew could be telling us anything, and I'd just be like, yes. Pogacar is the bet. That's what I'm hearing.
Let me just say, I'm just so glad I didn't have to type any of this out for graphics.
You're not putting this on the VSiN.com/picks page? Oh, yes. No, I'm sorry.
I don't know where to begin.
I don't even know how to. All right. And then you have been, I got the Roku on, and every day I think of you.
Sure.
Because up there, I've got, your standard sports. And then there's these trials, name your sport. There's always trials, and I'm like, Drew's watching that right now. What do you got for us?
Good question. So I'm done with my swimming projections. U.S. gold projections are down relative to a normal year for us. Usually we're scooping 11, 12, 15 golds in swimming, but the world has caught up to us, and we only have four events that I think are likely, that is to say over 90% chance to win gold at the Olympics this year in swimming. Katie Ledecky in the 1500 freestyle, Gretchen Walsh in the 100 fly, the women's 4x100 medley, I think we are pretty likely to win, and the men's 4x100 medley, I think we are likely to win. That is low. Usually we're like six or seven likelies. We're only at four. Our big kind of chunk is 50 to 90%, I would say. And I'll call these could happen. Ledecky in the 800 free. She's got to beat Summer McIntosh. That's going to be one of the best races of the entire Olympics. Women's 200 IM. Katie Douglas is going to go up against a really stacked field. That's going to be an incredible race. But she should win, could win. Fingers crossed. Same for Katie Douglas in the women's 200 breaststroke. Reagan Smith in the women's 100 and 200 back is basically a coin flip in both of those races up against Australia's Kaylee McKeown. And then Ryan Murphy in the men's 100 and 200 back in some super talented fields. Those are both coin flips. Matt Fallon, men's 200 breaststroke, a coin flip. And Caleb Dressel, men's 100 fly, is a coin flip. And, so if we take half of those, that gets us into the eight golds kind of range. And then we have a handful of maybes. Lily King in the 100 breast, Gretchen Walsh in the 50 free, Caleb Dressel in the 50 free, Jack Alexi in the 100 free, Nick Fink in the 100 breast, and then long shot chances are 1500 free, Katie Ledecky in the 400 free, Reagan Smith in the 2 fly, Foster in the men's 2 IM and 4 IM, Fink in the 100 free for the 800 free. And then a bunch where we have absolutely no chance, including the women's 4IM, which is going to go to Summer McIntosh, the 200 free, which is going to go to Ariana Titmus, and then the Australians are going to win gold in the women's 4x200 free and the 4x100 free relay.
Wow. Well, I think I speak for everyone when I say I'm going to have to listen to that back. That's a lot. Thank you, Drew. Appreciate it. And more Olympics next week with you.
Of course. I'll send you my clip notes.
Wimbledon on Thursday. Yes. Podcast. Let's do it. Coming back with John Legesa next. Back on a numbers game. Un partido de números. If you're doing this in Spanish, for those listening in Spanish. Skill Alexander. It's Wyatt Tomchek in for Kelly Bidlin, who is, just taking a week off. Doing his thing. His thing might be.
Well-deserved vacation for Kelly.
People say that. They're always like, well-deserved. And I always push back. I'm like, is it? That kind of thing. As a guy who
sorry, I'm
who
sorry,
likes,
Kelly. I'm sorry.
No. For Kelly, it is. But I'm like, in general, people are like, well-deserved vacation. I don't know. We just default to that. Sometimes, I don't know. Sometimes it's not well-deserved.
Maybe you just don't like the person. You're like, yeah, it's well-deserved. Maybe you don't take as much
maybe
as
Kelly's
like,
I'm sick of Gil. I'm going away for a while.
I won't reveal our text. I'm just kidding.
It could very well be that. We get tweets at Beatty the Book. Always appreciate the feedback. As far as Drew's fish are concerned. Bruce Dobigan is the fish. He goes, I'm the fish guy. Cichlids. Thought if they weren't AI, they were Jack Dempsey's. Damn, Roger, Rafa, and Joker. Sublime, he says. Cichlids from Drew Dizzy. When he said aggressive fish, I thought the same thing you did. I was like, oh no. Is he having, like, fighting each other?
I like, the only aggressive fish I can think of is like a piranha or like, you know, something like that.
Mike Stacks. This is a great tweet. Gil, based on the 17 voters you just showed us, don't you think the books would have someone inside to know how the votes are leaning? So when they offer these crazy prices, they're just collecting free money on everyone except for the McDavid bettors. Looks that way to me. So what you're suggesting is they know which way the voters are going. Either they've submitted their ballots or they haven't. They know that, and then to induce bets on others like Bobrovsky, they have this massive movement. To quote Kevin Garnett, anything is possible, which I believe is exactly what Kevin Garnett meant when he said it.
It wasn't Jason Tatum?
No, Jason Tatum still with the – not enough was made of that, right? We didn't make enough of that. The corniest post-game, let me desperately search for a meme by – what they gonna say now? What they like? He was workshopping like four different things the whole time afterwards. Dropped the mic at one of the post game things. Anyway, that's a pretty interesting tweet from Mike Stacks. Anything is possible. Could a book know that? Yes. Do I think they know it every time? I don't. But it's an interesting thought, nonetheless. Absolutely possible. John Legesa joins us now. Instant offense. He's the microwave. He's the Vinny Johnson of this show. He joins us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line to talk some baseball with us. He's the host of the Corked Stats podcast, MLB and NFL writer for The Athletic, and you can follow him on Twitter at John Legesa. That's L-A-G-H-E-Z-Z-A. Lag has a... What's happening?
Ding! Gil, what's going on, man? Spike it. Let's go, man. I could not be more ready.
How's your baseball season going, man?
You know, it's been up and down. Luckily, yesterday we had a massive sweep. You know, sometimes turning a cruise ship around takes a long time. But we're playing right around flat, which, you know, for a lot of people that actually model and then try and do picks, you know, this is stuff you and I have talked about off air. It's difficult enough to model, but then to try and, you know, challenge the general market as prices are moving and do content creation, very difficult. So, you know, we're right around flat. I'm pretty happy. I'm actually looking to close out strong because I think we're starting to see the warm weather impact the offense a little bit, and things are starting to pick up just a touch.
I'm going to throw this out at you right here, Wyatt, so I apologize for doing this, but updated the June wins total last night. The Boston Red Sox, with their come-from-behind win over the Toronto Blue Jays yesterday, they were down 4. They were down 6-2. They come back. They tie it in the 8th. They win it in the 9th. They are 14-7 now in the month of June, headed into the final 6 days of the month of June. They have a one-win advantage over a bevy of teams, including our 25-1 Houston Astros at 13-7. And you have a play on the Astros today, sir, and I was I smiled when I saw it. What do you got?
Yeah, Wyatt was pretty thrilled. Give me the Astros today. So they're at home hosting the Rockies. Let's not bury the lead. We like them by a million. So we're going to take the run line cover. This one was even money early on this morning. As my model tends to do, sometimes we put our weight, our thumb on the scale of the market. I think I sort of minus 125, which is still really viable and all within the model stuff. So the Rockies are throwing Austin Gomber. It's been really brutal for him. You know, the expected ERA is north of 5. Doesn't strike anybody out. Single-digit KBB, single-digit swinging strike. He falls behind and then misses the zone. A lot of the stuff we're looking for. Plus, he struggled with home runs. 355 expected wOBA on the year. And you can't even blame it on Coors. He has not been good. He has a 5-year ERA on the road anyway. So he's going to face your Astros. And Hunter Brown, it's funny, you asked me how the season was going. I think one of the reasons that I usually do so well, I don't want to put the horns on it, is, you know, we always have our eye in the market, and we're watching the kind of trends change. Hunter Brown's a perfect example. He had a 10 ERA through 6 starts. So, Gil, if you're using year-to-date stats, it takes a long time to correct it. Again, to turn the cruise ship takes a long time. They dumped the fastball. I'm usually not a big sinker fan, but in his case, it's worked because it's helping him work lower in the zone. And Brown's been fantastic lately and kind of living up to all the pedigree hype that we thought we got. So when these young men really hit that stride, you got to take that first clump in the beginning and maybe just amputate it. He's got a 3-4 expected ERA in the season. Now, all the even the season stats are starting to come up. We love the ground ball rate. I think we have an edge all the way around. Houston offense has not been great without Tucker, but they are, you know, at least an order of magnitude better than the Rockies on the road. And then you go into the bullpen. We've been really looking to butter our bread all year. I've been picking on the Rockies bullpen. They kind of remind me of the A's last year, meaning, the team as constructed and on a day-to-day basis is not good. But the bullpen is so historically bad that it really moves the entire market and even the general perception. So the Rockies bullpen has an 8.25 ERA over the last 45 innings, a 2 whip, 325 batting average allowed. So if we don't get the two runs early, Gil, have some patience, because I think we'll be able to stick it to them. Between Beeks and Kinley, they just don't have anybody to get critical outs. And last I checked, Jordan Alvarez is really good. So I really like the Astros minus 125 to cover it. I think this one closes probably closer to 150. Minus 150, I mean.
By the way, worst record in the month of June, for those who care. Tie between the White Sox, Athletics, and Rockies. All are 6-16. Yeah. The Rockies have the second worst run differential in all of the month of June, minus 52 in this month alone. Only the Marlins at 6-14 with a minus 55 run differential, worse in that department. And so for me in this bet of June at Circa, because I have double the action at William Hill Caesars, but I do have a bet here at Circa too, that is determined. The tiebreaker is fewest wins and best run differential. So I would love for the Astros to just run it up today and tomorrow.
Well, they're looking
the
really good.
Yeah.
Again, if the pendulum, if baseball and the season as a macro is about the little pendulum swings within, then I really like the direction, the trajectory that the Astros are on. Just really quick to expand on the point that you mentioned, those really bad teams. Yes, they're really bad. I probably shouldn't be doing air quotes. Those are the worst bullpens in the league.
Oh.
In particular with the White Sox and even the A's now, they're actually very profitable F5 teams because they roll out cromulent starters for the White Sox. Listen, Eric Fetty and Garrett Crochet are very profitable F5 pitchers. Then the bullpen blows the game. They wake up the next day and the White Sox are underdogs again. But that F5 is still money in your pocket. So when we think about these bad teams, people, I think the good lesson is, think of them in terms of an F5 team and a full game team. The Rockies with Quantrill and Gomber, that's a little bit different. We don't want to touch them at all. But, you know, the A's with Estes, Hogan, Sears, and then, like I said, Crochet and Fetty for the White Sox. There are, you know, nice spots to take your shots in and out, race to 15 outs.
You have another play, and this is about a team, the Washington Nationals, which in the month of June are 2 games above 500. For the season, they're 2 games below 500. They're only 1.5 games out of a playoff spot in the National League. You like them today in a first 5 bet.
Look at us, Stockton to Malone. Perfect setup in a segue. They call that in the business. You know, looking at the Nationals today, another one of those teams that they carry a certain narrative. They're not a great team because they don't hit for power. But pound-for-pound basis, Mackenzie Gore is excellent. You know, 3.5 ERA. The 1.4 whip's a little high, but it's on a 3.77 BABIP, which should correct. 21 KBB, 15 swinging and strike. This is all really strong. 3/4 of a homer, 9. 2.91 expected wOBA on the season. Adam Mazur, on the bump for the Padres. So that's why we like the F5 because the Nats bullpen's been a bit sketchy. Padres offense also not quite the same without Fernando Tatis. I could not believe Gore was listed at even money. Mazur has a 7.25 ERA, a 2 whip, and 8.30 OPS expected ERA north of 5.25. Yeah, I just love this one. I think the Nats should kind of bully the Padres, who have struggled against lefties in the first place. Give me all the swing and miss stuff, maybe a ground ball double play or two. I think the Nats get this one 2-1, 3-1, through 5, even money.
I am looking at first 5 stats up to the minute. Up to the minute, first 5, the most profitable teams first 5 this year. I'm just trying to see where the Nats. The Nats are the 7th most profitable first 5 team in all of baseball this year. By the way, number one, any guesses?
Irvin comes in at an underdog, yeah, you know what I mean?
Any guesses who number one is? First 5, most profitable? Again, if you bet this team,
it would be the White Sox, but maybe it's the Guardians.
The White Sox are 6th, which is an amazing thing. Philly.
Who's one?
Philadelphia Phillies, number one.
They never lose, though. They never lose.
Makes sense with their starters.
It helps to not lose.
It helps to not lose. Thank you, John. Appreciate it.
Put it on my tombstone. Love you, Gil. Have a great weekend, everybody.
You too, man. Little Wimbledon talk on the other side. It's a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.